Hello, students of Seneca. This is Lima here, and welcome to this episode of the Night Before Your Sociology A-Level, Paper 3. Today's podcast will be split into three parts. First, we'll be delving into how different functionalists view crime. Most notably, we'll be looking at the views of Durkheim and Merton. Then we'll be looking into how gender plays a role in the social distribution of crime. And last but not least, we'll be looking at prevention and punishment according to the sociologist Foucault. So let's get started. So sociologist Durkheim claimed that crime is healthy for society, therefore crime can be functional. If crime is regulated and managed by the relevant social institutions, it can be beneficial in maintaining the value consensus. Functionists argue that there are three functions of crime. First, we have boundary maintenance. So Durkheim says that when people commit crime, they are punished by the criminal justice system. This reminds other citizens of the value consensus, which therefore strengthens its effectiveness. Crime creates social solidarity, a sense of togetherness in society that serves to build a wider community together. The second function of crime, according to functionists, is serving as a warning device. So Durkheim argues that this is when society needs to adapt and change as a result of crime. All change starts with deviance, or in extreme cases, criminal activity. Individuals must be able to think differently if society wants to evolve further. And criminal activity can sometimes show that a current social policy has lost its function in society. The third function of crime is to act as a safety valve. So the functionist Davis suggests that a certain amount of deviant behaviour can actually be beneficial to the maintenance of social order. Davis uses the continuation of prostitution as evidence to support this claim. Davis argues that the use of prostitutes can act as a safety valve for men to release their sexual tension and frustrations without threatening their marriage. This therefore maintains the nuclear family. And according to Davis, it is more beneficial to maintain the nuclear family in society than it is to stamp out prostitution. So next up we have the functionalist Merton's views on crime. So Merton tried to focus on why people committed crime rather than the functions it performed for society. Merton discusses the American dream as an analogy for this theory. So the key principle of the American dream is that everyone can achieve the cultural goal of material success through the means of hard work and determination. In unequal societies, some find achieving the cultural goal of material success fairly easily. However, for those individuals who can never achieve the material success, they will begin to feel strain. And that's where the name of the theory comes from, strain theory. When outlining strain, Merton outlines five possible responses that could occur. So the first possible response, conformists. These are people who fail to achieve success, but still believe that hard work will help them achieve the goal of material success. Secondly, we have the rebels. These are people who react badly to not achieving the cultural goal of material success and therefore abandon it altogether and create new goals. Thirdly, we have the innovators. So the innovators are people who realize that they cannot achieve material success by conforming to the conventional means of hard work. Instead, they create new ways to achieve wealth, which may lead to criminal activity. Fourth of all, we have the ritualists. So the ritualists are people who cope with failure by forgetting about the cultural goal. They compensate for their failure by obsessing over the means and therefore work too hard and become jobsworths who don't relate to other staff members. They irritate others and therefore don't progress in the workplace. And last but not least, we have the retreatists. So these are people who give up on the goals as they lack the self-belief to achieve them. They also reject the means as they are no longer relevant to them. So to recap, Merton's five different personalities or responses, if you will, to the string theory. We have conformists, rebels, the innovators, the ritualists, and the retreatists. So quick fire up question. What did Merton call those who fail to achieve success but still believe that hard work will help them achieve the goal of material success? Which of those five personalities? That's right, it's the conformists. So, this leads us to the sociologist Pollock's idea that the criminal justice system treats men and women differently. He claims that this stems from gender role socialization. And this has come to be known as the chivalry thesis. So the criminal justice system is traditionally dominated by men who are raised to be chivalrous towards women. This means that when faced with a female offender, male police officers are more likely to treat them more leniently. Haydenson is a radical feminist who claims that the criminal justice system treats women poorly when investigating claims of sexual assault or domestic violence. Women are viewed to have deviated from stereotypical gender norms. For example, if they act in a sexually promiscuous way, then they are not performing their expressive role. So perhaps this is a reason why women are treated badly in investigations of sexual assault and domestic violence. What is the sex role theory? The sociologist Parsons suggests that women are less likely to be criminals due to their genetic characteristics. Women are the expressive leader in the primary socialization of children, and so have more to lose if they turn to criminal activity. However, if we go back to the radical feminist Haydenson, she claims that women are used to being controlled by men and are more likely to conform to society's norms and values, so are restricted when it comes to criminal or deviant activity. So who was it again that suggested that women are less likely to be criminals due to their genetic characteristics? That's right, it was Parsons. Now, what is the liberation thesis? Another sociologist, Adler, suggests that as women become more prevalent in traditionally male spaces, such as employment, women will have more opportunity to commit crime, for example, white-collar crime. Katz suggests that men commit crime in order to feel a thrill. And in most cases, Katz claims that many crimes are committed out of boredom and that male criminals are seeking thrills at any opportunity. And that's it for our overview of how gender plays a role in the distribution of crime. Moving on to our final topic, the prevention and punishment according to the sociologist Foucault. So who was Foucault? Well, he was the one who examined how surveillance had become a tool of social control and is now used to monitor behaviour. What does he mean when he discusses sovereign power? So, sovereign power refers to when the monarchy had overall control over punishment, and sentences would usually involve bodily harm that would be conducted publicly to send a message to other citizens. Disciplinary power, on the other hand, is more dominant in today's society, and this is when the criminal justice system tries to rehabilitate offenders through punishment of the mind. So Foucault has a theory of panopticon. This is when prison inmates are led to believe that there's a possibility of constant surveillance, and this threat encourages them to self-regulate their behavior. In this way, surveillance becomes a tool of social control as it's used to mold behaviour. So, a little recap of the two types of power according to Foucault. We have sovereign power, which is when the monarchy had overall control over punishment. And we have disciplinary power, which is used in the modern criminal justice system and attempts to rehabilitate offenders through punishment of the mind. What did the sociologist Durkheim believe about punishment? Durkheim believed that punishment is expressive as it heals the wounds of the public while also promoting the value consensus. In Durkheim's view, traditional societies use retributive justice. This was simple, effective, and often brutal. So, quick recap, what did Durkheim believe about punishment? One, that punishment is expressive. And secondly, that it heals the wounds of the public whilst also promoting the value consensus. Restitutive justice is used in modern society as punishment must now restore a sense of equilibrium to society by ensuring that the community is healed from the damage of the offence that was committed. So, which are the features of retributive justice? One, it was used in traditional societies. Two, it is simple and effective. And three, it's often brutal. Marxists believe that the role of punishment is to benefit capitalism through the imprisonment of the working classes. The criminal justice system uses selective law enforcement to protect the interests of the ruling class and acts as a repressive state apparatus by making the proletariat conform due to the fear of punishment. Now, how has the role of prisons changed over time? Well, Garland studied the use of prisons as the main form of punishment in the USA and the UK. And prisons are now used by politicians to prove to the electorate that they are tough on crime to gain popularity and therefore to win elections. And that's it for our overview of surveillance and punishment. Right, so just to round off, we're going to take a few moments to go through the stress buster, which will hopefully help to calm your nerves and make sure that you're in great condition for tomorrow. So today we are going to go through SpongeBob's Guide to Exam Stress. So make sure you take regular breaks and do what you enjoy, whether that's going for a walk, having a little ice cream, just treat yourself. Remember, this is quite a stressful time and you need to take care of yourself. Next up, go and see your mates. Humans are social creatures and it will do us a world of good to be interacting with other people, especially people that you actually like. So go and see your friends. Make sure you go out for a walk, get some fresh air if it's not raining, because in the UK, we have a lot of rain. And from me and everyone else at Seneca, we wish you all the very, very best of luck.
Good luck for your exams. We're going to be releasing Night Before podcasts before every exam. And if you head on over to YouTube on every weekday, we are going to be doing live streams at 4:45 and 5:30. So make sure you subscribe. And while you're at it, rate us 5 stars. We're amazing. Good luck.